Welcome to ASME TechCast, bringing you the innovators, the innovations, and the issues that push the envelope of engineering. I'm Louise Poirier, Senior Editor at Mechanical Engineering Magazine. When it comes to research and development, engineers lead the way across a wide range of industries. But when it's time to translate cutting-edge research and prototypes into commercial applications and technologies, the process can be more complex than you'd think. Joining us today to shed some light on that process, from strategies to challenges to real-world examples, is Dr. Paul Cherukuri. Paul is Rice University's Vice President for Innovation, and he also serves as Chief Innovation Officer, Adjunct Professor of Management and Entrepreneurship, and Associate Research Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering. He's a physicist, chemist, and medtech entrepreneur with more than 15 years of experience in academia and the pharmaceutical industry. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Well, I thought a great place to start would be with telling us a little bit about your role at Rice. You know, you're the first Vice President of Innovation for the university. You know, what's that about? Tell us about your work.
Yeah, well, it's an exciting role. One of the best aspects of it is that because it's the first time we've ever had this in the university, I can kind of make it up. But I can make it up within a certain boundary condition. And so those conditions are that Reggie DeRoche, our new president, he came in and he wanted to create this office and this new initiative that was hyper-focused on creating innovation. Innovation meaning that taking our new ideas and translating it into workable products that could then leave the university and be commercialized. So that's a big part of my life is finding technology and kind of breakthrough ideas and cultivating that across the university, providing resources for our faculty and students to really do that at scale and really have impact in the world. It's a challenging job inside of the university because we're creating something that hadn't been made before, but that's a wonderful playground to play in. So I'm enjoying it. I think we have a lot of different things that we do that is very different than most universities, and this is one of the big ones. This is one distinguishing hallmark of Rice, that we're going after innovation at the presidential level and then making it happen as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. Well, for those researchers who are looking to translate their innovations into actual products, what are some of the most vital strategies that you found to ensure such a successful transition?
Well, I think a key sort of foundational strategy is that, as a vice president, one of the things that I can do is really just empower other people to do more. And so the key strategy is finding out what is it that our faculty and students want to do, and then marrying that to problems that people are interested in. So one of the first things that I always say to our students and faculty is that the fastest way to get your stuff into a market is to find a customer. It seems like an obvious statement.
Right.
But, many startups think that they start off of getting capital, getting venture capital and things like that. But the faster you get to sales, the more solid your company is. And that is something that we try to teach our folks, that the very first conversation you need to have is who is the person who may actually buy this thing. And if you haven't even talked to a single person about that, then you probably don't have a viable product yet.
Sure.
And it's not something that should go into a company yet. So, we call it customer discovery, like you're looking under a rock, but it's not really that. It's really just making a phone call or a Zoom call and sitting down with people and saying, hey, look, I've got this thing that I think would help you. Would you pay for this? And if you get some real interest in people wanting to, vote with their dollar and give you a confidence vote, then I think you're well on your way. And how many people that would really benefit defines your market size, right? So all these wonderful business terms that we talk in entrepreneurship are very alien to most of our faculty. And so we're really kind of teaching this kind of new vocabulary and then getting them to really talk to other people that they normally don't interact with. That's the very first thing you'd have to do. And that's how we are empowering, by providing those kinds of interactions in a way that just gets you kickstarted. But then you take it to the next level. And that's really developing the technology even further. So another key strategy inside of Rice is that instead of us putting out our capabilities into the real world immediately, we cook it up a little longer, make sure that it's a viable product or a viable prototype, I should say, and then spin it out into a company that can be productized. And that's a really important aspect, because a lot of startups fail from universities because they still are not ready. And so we got to get them ready in our house, and then provide the necessary resources when they leave the house. It's very similar to raising a child in many ways, right?
Yeah.
You prep the child, you get it ready, you get them to understand what life is all about, and then once they're ready to enter the real world, they go off and do great things. And I think it's the same thing with startups. You take care of the baby, and then you give it birth into the market.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what are some of the most common mistakes, sort of beyond that you're seeing made both on the research and the market side?
It's interesting from a university. There's a big disconnect between what kind of research is done inside the university and what is happening in the market. I would think of universities, like the real place where universities play very, very well is the long play, meaning that we make breakthroughs that you can't even see as a product yet. And there's an expectation that everything that we're doing is immediately market ready, and it's not. Because the science hasn't been cooked in, certainly the engineering hasn't been baked up, and all of those kinds of things that you need to do. And so once we have research, it doesn't necessarily mean you've got the market. You've got to figure that out. But it could be that what you've created is not really an invention yet, that it's really an idea that could become an invention. But a viable invention is one that's commercializable, which means that somebody's going to pay their hard-earned cash for it. And you've got to create that entire continuum. And so one of the big mistakes here is that we have breakthrough ideas that never see the light of day, and maybe shouldn't, unless we really know whether or not the market's ready to receive it. That's one aspect. The other aspect is the universities create new markets. So we don't just do the kind of things that people need in the immediate. We create the needs that people don't see yet. And that's an important aspect. That's where the disruption comes in. So there are breakthrough ideas that are happening inside of Rice and probably other universities, but certainly at Rice, where we would love to tell the public about them. And I have this problem of leaking a lot of information. So I'm trying to hold my tongue, but I'm holding my tongue mainly because I don't want to give false hope. What I want to do is convey things that are tangible and verifiable, that when we come out and say that we've done a thing, that it's a real thing and it's not just a PR play. And so that's part of the Rice brand. And we're really making sure people know that. But I would love to just tell everybody all the wild ideas that are going on that you probably have never heard of. And if they hit, it's amazing and would just change the planet. And so that's exciting. But
yeah,
we can't really talk about all the disruptive things unless they're really viable. But those are the two aspects: stuff that people know that will happen, and then stuff that they don't see coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk real life examples. You know, I know there's, like you mentioned, there's a ton of stuff going on at Rice. What's on its way out of the lab at the moment that you can talk about?
Yeah, there are a few things. For example, we just created these moonshot programs. One of them is the Biotech Launchpad. It is going from concept to the clinic with a new type of biotech material, and you can think of it as a drug and device combination. And the idea is we get it from our labs into the clinic. That's where we're launching it. So it's a launch into the market. Can we actually do that within 5 years so that we can save patients' lives quicker? And give people a longer, healthier life. That is a goal of the Biotech Launchpad. That particular program, for example, one of the things that we have is a company called Motif, It just raised 18 million, I think it was 18.5 million for Series A funding, which is really, really great. Very proud of Jacob Robinson, a professor at Rice. He founded the company, is really taking it to another level. That particular device is very cool. And it is, and here's why. If you've seen these cranial magnetic stimulators, they're these devices that you have to go into the hospital and you sit under this big big coil, and the coil applies a magnetic field and stimulates the brain so that you can reset the electrical impulses in the brain, and it reduces your depression and anxiety and things like that. What Jacob figured out, and a few of his colleagues, is that he can make a tiny device that is implanted in right under the skull, just into the skull itself. And that's, believe it or not, that's a common operation that happens daily, millions of patients all over the world, where you poke a hole, you drop this tiny device in there, and then you put on a hat, and the hat will then stimulate your brain as you need it throughout the day. You don't need to go to the hospital. So when you're feeling depressed, your app will tell you that you need to stimulate, and it'll just stimulate it, and you'll not need a drug. All you'll need is this little device that stays in there forever for a long period of time and has no biocompatibility issues and all that. He invented it. And it's beautiful physics, by the way. I love the device itself. But then the design of the engineering behind it was even more brilliant. It's a tiny device, and it's like the size of maybe a dime. Maybe smaller, actually, and it sits right in the brain. Now, the other thing about it is that's cool is that it doesn't have a battery. So it's driven externally through capacitive coupling, inductive coupling, I should say, from magnetic field into the stimulator. And that, I think, was brilliant choice on their part. And so it just has a little kind of elastic material that when you put a magnetic field on there, it'll start to oscillate. That oscillating strip of material will then create an electric field, right? It's a magneto-electro kind of strip, or electric strip. You can think of it that way. That electric field then hits the brain and gives you stimulation. So sure. It's a very, very cool device.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's one new thing. There's plenty of those to go around, and I could talk your ear off about it, but that was one of them. The other one was this plasma technology that we have that we're developing right now, and that's still very, very early stage. It's using the fourth state of matter to do new types of chemistry. So the fourth state of matter, right? Solid, liquid, gas, we all hear about it. The fourth is plasma. It's an ionized gas, and it gives it a very different property. It's not really a solid, liquid, or a gas. It's an ionized form of a gaseous state. The majority of the universe is made from that. The chemistry around plasma is not as well understood as we'd like. And how to use the chemistry or plasma chemistry itself to do new reactions is not well understood. So that is a fundamental new tool that we have, and we're using that to go after climate change.
Something else I'm also curious about is kind of the role of industry partnerships in the work that you guys do. I know you guys recently launched a new collaboration with Woodside Energy. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, that was thrilling. That was an exciting thing. And I'll tell you why. Generally, in academia, we're always going around looking for money to do work. And, because that's the business model of the university. You go out and you get NIH or somebody else to fund your research. And then you do your research, you publish your paper. That's the circle of life inside the university. This one in particular was interesting because Woodside Energy came into my office about a year ago, actually, a little less than a year ago. And they had a proposition. They actually wanted to go after the CO2 problem, and they didn't want a lot of press around it. They said they don't want press, they don't want papers, they want solutions. And I said, I don't believe you. And I started to get to know them, and then it was true. They were genuinely wanting to go after this problem. And I said, well, look, a lot of our faculty, we've all had conversations around this. CO2 is a tough problem, but I don't think anybody's really tackled it at scale properly yet. A lot of people are trying, and you know, as we say in the South, bless their heart.
Yeah.
But I think we can do better, and we may have some ideas around that if we'd use first principles, and we can activate our faculty to go after it from a first principles physics perspective that leads to the chemistry that will lead to the scale, then we'll do it. And they said, yes, we want to get to scale. We want you to commercialize this. We want that within 5 years. Can you do that? Okay. So you want us to solve the CO2 problem for the planet in 5 years. And I said, deal. Let's do that.
Sure.
Because if anything, we've got to be doing the problems that nobody else wants to work on. It's, you know, JFK had said this on Rice's campus. We do these things because they are hard. And that is the reason the university exists. So we're going after it. Woodside is generously supporting it, but not only in money, but also in brain power. Their people are working with us hand in glove to really develop this new technology around plasma. And then we're gonna push this out as fast as possible. We meet every weekend and during the week to get this done. We're building the reactors now. I'm really gratified that I can actually, you know, lead a lot of this effort with my partner Aditya Mohite in chemical engineering here at Rice, a brilliant professor. So we have a brilliant team of faculty, and this team of professors who are taking this on are all entrepreneurs and engineers and physicists and brilliant, right? That's a rare group to be a part of. So I'm just very fortunate to be leading this effort and making sure that we're doing all this. So it's fun on top of that, because we're doing incredible science. I mean, and the science is really even cooler because we're engineering it, right? We're putting together systems that haven't been built. And that's really what's wonderful, but we're always focused on the target, which is, if we can build a system in the lab, is this a scalable process that it can get out into the real world and actually help, you know, instead of us emitting CO2, converting it into something we can use? That's the idea. And we're always thinking scale, and we're not going down the idea of, well, I can do this on a milligram scale. We're always thinking tons. So how do we do that right from the beginning? And that's what's defining our engineering, right? And it's a remarkable effort. I wish I could film every session we have and just put it out there, but we can't do that.
Yeah, no, of course. Well, it's exciting to think that in just 5 years, where you guys could be.
We will. I would say within the first two, we're going to crack some puzzles here. Some minor miracles have to happen in science.
Sure.
And then we'd have to scale, but we've got to go faster than this.
Yeah.
Time is a waste and a change in, as they say. And so we've got to keep going.
Absolutely. Final thoughts, lab to market.
Oh, lab to market.
Lab to market.
Yeah. Lab to market's an interesting concept. You know, we do have other things that are very, very short term kind of, new concepts that are going from the lab into the market. And I think those are also incredibly impactful and things like that. The stuff that really transforms society takes longer.
Yeah.
And because we have climate change, because we have healthcare issues and broad societal issues in how we deal with all these things, we recognize that acceleration is key.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the university is focused on moving faster. And so the lab to market, you know, you can have an infinite time scale and it'll be out there, and we're not looking at that. We're not even looking at just the 50-year horizon. We're looking at 10, 5, 1, 5, 10 kind of horizons. Can we actually do this? So the lab to market problem, I think we've probably got the best shot at solving that and doing it well. But the key is to go back to the engineers in the labs and the scientists and engineers who are working on the problem, and working it straight from the beginning, from a first principles aspect. And by that, I mean, start with the physics. And if the physics indicates that we can do it, then we should be able to engineer it. And if we haven't figured out the engineering problem of it, then we've got to work through that. And it's just a matter of focusing our efforts and getting it out. The nice thing is that we're thinking product first, the end goal first, and then starting with first principles to get to that goal. So that's where our lab to market speed will come in. It hadn't been tried this way. So every day is like a new opportunity to really grow. And I think it's just been a remarkable journey already within the first year and a half of taking this on. I can't wait to see what we do by the end of this year.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. I think that's a great stopping point as well. So I'm going to say, let's call it. Thank you so much for joining us today, Paul. I learned a lot. Really enjoyed it.
Me too. Thank you so much.
All right. And if you'd like to hear more great conversations on a wide range of engineering topics, please subscribe to ASME TechCast on your podcast platform of choice. I'm Louise Poirier. Thanks so much for listening.